Ahoy, mateys! Welcome to the GameBuoy.org video game podcast, your twice-monthly port of call for gaming news and views that maybe aren't on your radar, but most definitely should be. I'm your host, Captain Spike, and with me, as always, is First Mate Slagcake.
Yarr!
Today is December 28, 2014, and this is Episode 70, 2014 Year in Review. Welcome, once again, our lovely and beautiful listeners, to another episode of the GameBuoy.org video game podcast.
GameBuoy.org video game podcast.
This week, we're taking a look back at the year that was, so buckle in and get ready for that. But first, we have our usual slate of follow-ups and news bits. Slaggy, if you want to take this first one?
Yes, Sakurai-san has confirmed in a recent interview with Famitsu that Smash Brothers for Wii U and 3DS will not get any more balance patches to make major adjustments to gameplay. It might receive some further adjustments to online multiplayer over time, but unless there are any glaring issues found within the game that will be addressed in any future patches, no more balance is coming, so gotta stick with what you want. Or something like that.
Yeah, I think this is probably a good thing, you know. A lot of fighting games, they do get patches throughout the entire life of the title. They continue seeing post-release support and balance changes. But I don't think Smash is the kind of game that necessarily needs that at this point. I think all of the glaring balance issues from, like, the early days have been dealt with. And at this point, I think it's just a matter of picking a character and getting good with them.
Yeah, that's what I meant. And, you know, like, in the comments over at Silicon Era, apparently Diddy Kong is pretty OP, but, you know, I'm always of the opinion you should play who you like.
Yeah, I mean, I know a few people who play Diddy, and, you know, I can take them down, so, you know, I really do think that after a point, it's more a matter of, you know, you have the tools, just learn to use them.
Yep.
We also have word here that Naruto Shippuden Ultimate Ninja Storm 4 will be coming to North America for the Xbox One, PS4, and PC via Steam. Bandai Namco Europe has described this version of the game as the quote-unquote final massive strike for the series.
That makes sense, you know, but the story could always continue on in more games, but...
Well, you know, like we had discussed very briefly last week, I'm sure there will be more games in the Narultimate Ninja series, but I feel like maybe this is the end of the Storm series.
Oh, yeah. So, that makes sense.
Yeah, definitely.
We have confirmation from Idea Factory that Fairy Fencer F, Neptunia Rebirth 1, and Neptunia Rebirth 2 are all coming to PC via Steam. They will announce system requirements and release dates in the future.
That is great news. All three of those are games that I will be buying on Steam.
Yes!
We also have the super exciting news that this past week, Theater Rhythm Final Fantasy Curtain Call in North America got a big slate of new DLC.
Were you about to call it Courtesy Call? It wakes you up. It's like, you gotta get ready for work. Thanks.
Ah, right. This includes songs from Bravely Default, Final Fantasy XIV, Final Fantasy Type-0, Romancing Saga and Saga Frontier, and most excitingly, Secret of Mana and Chrono Trigger.
Yes.
And while we don't know what this content will consist of, we were also told to look forward to another batch of new tracks on January 8, 2015.
Well, I really want the Fairgrounds music from Chrono Trigger. That's one of my favorite Chrono Trigger songs of all time.
Well, let's keep our fingers crossed then.
Resident Evil HD, if you pre-order it on one of the PS3 or PS4 consoles, you will get it for both. So it's a cross-buy only for pre-order. This, of course, is the HD remake of the remake that was originally on GameCube.
Excellent. I'm really looking forward to that. And, you know, this may have just sealed the deal on me pre-ordering this.
Woohoo!
343 Industries has announced that players who have previously logged into Halo Master Chief Collection will be getting the campaign from Halo ODST as a free download to make up for the networking issue they've been having.
Hmm.
So, you know, certainly the Halo Master Chief Collection online issues that they've had are very unfortunate.
I mean, who hasn't had online issues right? The past month?
But I liked the ODST campaign, and I think getting it as a free download is awesome, because I feel like the people who don't get it free are probably going to have to pay like $10 for it. And
yeah.
For those people, it's worth it, because ODST was pretty cool.
Well, did you try to log in and play online multiplayer?
Yes.
Okay, good. Then you'll be eligible. Some people were unhappy in the joystick comments, because they're like, oh, well, I avoided trying to log into online because it was broken.
Yeah.
No, I don't get it.
I do think it should probably just go out to everyone who owned the game and had, like, registered it with their username or whatever.
Yeah.
Before that point, downloaded the updates and everything. But, you know, I had logged in to try and play, so I'm not too worried myself.
Well, good. Then we'll play some ODST.
Woohoo!
In a recent interview with famous YouTube personality iJustine, which was really great and you should check it out, we got a tidbit about Mario Maker. This interview, of course, was with none other than Miyamoto and our favorite Treehouse representative, Bill Trinan. And Miyamoto-san was talking about some of the features of Mario Maker, including Mario 3 and Mario World new tile sets. But one thing that he did confirm is the ability to share your courses with others online. He did speak a lot about, you know, wanting to share it with people in your home. So, like, if Captain Bike made a Mario level and then handed it to me to try to play, like, you know, they still want to think of the Wii U as a, you know, home living room experience, but there will be online sharing, and yeah.
Excellent. That's great news. We also have word here in the from the world of the World of Warcraft that in the upcoming patch 6.1, we're going to be seeing improvements to garrisons, a new legendary follower, the ability to send tweets from within game,
nice.
New models for the Blood Elf player characters, shorter flight master routes, increased incentives for visiting other players' garrisons, a collection tab for heirlooms so that they'll no longer be taking up space in your inventory.
Thank God.
Then you won't have to worry about all of the, like, cross-mailing BS.
Right.
Which is great. But the big news to most players is that Blizzard is, quote-unquote, exploring a subscription currency that will function similarly to EVE Online's Plex.
Hey.
The idea being that you'll be able to buy and sell game time tokens for in-game gold. To give sort of like a legit spin on gold buying officially through Blizzard, and also for players who have just huge banks of gold that they're never going to spend, they can spend it on subscription time now and not have to be paying a monthly fee if they have that much gold.
Free to play. Well's going free to play. Game broken.
I've seen a lot of people say that, and it...
R.I.P. WoW.
I don't really feel like this is going free-to-play, except for the fact that, you know, there's an in-game way to pay for your subscription. Like, that's a bad thing.
Right? Like, I'm on the other end of it, where I'm like, hey, I got a bonus on my paycheck or something, and I'll drop $30 for 2 tokens of game time, and now I can buy that expensive mount I always wanted.
Cool, yeah, I mean, I think it makes sense, and I think giving players more options is always a good thing. As long as it doesn't mess with the fundamental game balance, I'm fine with it, and I don't think this does.
Well, we'll have to see how that pans out then.
We also have word here that the highly, hugely acclaimed Japanese visual novel Steins Gate is going to be localized and released in North America and Europe in 2015 for the PlayStation 3 and PlayStation Vita.
Oh, nice.
Those of you who listen and watch a lot of anime are probably familiar with the Steins Gate animated series, which is super good, and my understanding is that the game is actually better.
So, oh, wonderful.
Please look forward to that.
One Piece Musou 3, also known as One Piece Pirate Warrior 3, is coming to the West and will be available on Steam as well as PS3, PS Vita, and PS4. So if you're not a member of the PlayStation Nation, but you are a fan of these Bandai Namco Musous, then you will be able to warrior your pirate.
And I'm just going to put this out.
I guess warrior is not a verb, is it?
I'm just going to put this out there for those of you who loved Hyrule Warriors. One Piece Pirate Warriors is very similar in that it takes the, you know, Musou formula and applies it to a different license really well so that it doesn't necessarily feel like you're playing a Musou.
Yeah, just Luffy and Roronoa Zoro hacking up bad dudes.
One Piece Pirate Warriors 3 is slated for a North American release in summer 2015, and it'll be releasing in Japan on March 26, 2015, so not too big of a gap there.
In some news that is making all the shonen jump, J-Star's Victory Versus Plus, rather, is headed to North America for PS3, PS4, and Vita. This, of course, is going to include all of the favorite Shonen Jump franchises, but, you know, we kind of wonder.
Actually, unfortunately, we have to take a step back.
Oh?
Bandai Namco has confirmed that, very similar to what Capcom had to do with Tatsunoko Versus Capcom, where they removed a couple of characters due to licensing issues, Bandai Namco has confirmed that a few characters will not be coming over for the North American release.
Oh, darn.
They haven't yet stated which characters won't be coming over, but considering they're using Naruto, One Piece, Bleach and Dragon Ball pretty heavily in their promos, we can at least bet that those characters are safe.
Yeah. What we are getting is a new arcade mode for its Western debut, which will have one-on-one matches. And, like an arcade game.
Yeah. And I have to say, you know, I'll definitely be buying this even though I already imported it. This version is getting a PS4 release, so, you know, I'll take it.
Hyperdimension Neptunia U Action Unleashed is going to be a hack and slash game in the Neptunia universe. And there are going to be two new characters introduced based on Japanese magazines, Dengeki PlayStation and Famitsu.
Woohoo!
And there's not really any story motive yet for why they're hacking and slashing, but it's mentioned in Silicon Era's article that a mysterious proposition comes up.
That's
probably
exciting.
Be super meta and silly.
In release date news, we also have confirmation that Disgaea 5, now known in the North American territory as Disgaea 5 Alliance of Vengeance, will be coming out in North America on PS4 in fall of 2015.
Expect a Vita release a few years later.
Yeah, right. And for those of you who have been putting off playing Shantae and the Pirate's Curse on 3DS, waiting for the Wii U version, we are happy to point out that that game finally released for the Wii U platform earlier this week on Christmas Day.
Yay!
That's about it for our follow-ups. So now, let's move on over to some of those news bits.
News. Oh my god, news.
Alright. The actual changes to D, I'm going to talk about the official.
I'm going to be a bit snarky about.
Okay, do what you got to do.
Because then it's followed up with actual Devil Cry.
So if you want to start it off, so you can.
So in their latest string of confusing decisions, Capcom has announced that DMC Devil May Cry Definitive Edition is in development for Xbox One and PlayStation 4. This, of course, is the reboot, question mark, that kind of went nowhere with Emo Dante. That, I guess, people liked, but, you know, was not the Devil May Cry that many people hoped for. But, Captain Spike, there are a number of changes that may make this game more appealing.
So,
am I right?
So, the primary thing to keep in mind here is that DMC Definitive Edition, in a lot of ways, you know, I realize it's a meme now, like, LOL, Definitive Edition, re-release of last-gen games. This actually sounds like a pretty extensive reworking to make the game feel more like a Devil May Cry game. It's going to be releasing on PlayStation 4 and Xbox One on March 17th for a retail price of $39.99. And the changes per the press release are as follows. It is going to have a locked 60 frames per second frame rate with a 1080p resolution on both SKUs. More importantly, Ninja Theory has thoroughly examined the entire game and all of the user feedback they've gotten to completely rebalance and repolish every aspect of the gameplay, including reverting the way lock-ons work to the way they worked in Devil May Cry 3. They changed the enemy behavior system and the way the style grading system works. In addition to that, it's going to include all of the DLC from the last-gen versions of DMC, all of the costumes, weapon skins, retailer-exclusive pre-order bonus items, the Virgil's Downfall DLC campaign, all going to be available at the start in this package.
It's a pretty meaty package for $40.
It's also going to include a new Bloody Palace mode for Virgil. Bloody Palace is, of course, the, like, fighting waves of enemies to get, like, the best style rating, and you're, like, timed. It's been, like, a mainstay of the series for several games in the DMC, or Devil May Cry series now. They're adding that for the Virgil mode in DMC. It's going to include the Turbo mode that has also been a fan favorite of the Devil May Cry series. Will make the entire game run 20% faster, so that the game, you know, obviously is even more quote-unquote hardcore. Speaking of, the game will also include a toggle for hardcore mode that is going to change the way that your devil trigger meter builds up to be more like the old style games, and will change the way your style grades work so that it will use the same grading algorithm as previous games in the Devil May Cry series. It's also going to include the Gods Must Die difficulty level, which will be unlocked after defeating Dante Must Die, where all enemies are going to spawn in their own devil trigger mode and deal 2.5 times their normal damage, with no items allowed. They're also adding another mode after that called Must Style mode, where in order to deal any damage to enemies, you have to be an S-style rank, which is going to be amazing. It's also going to have new costumes for both Dante and Virgil, representing their appearances in earlier versions of the Devil May Cry series.
Oh.
It's also, of course, going to include more trophies and achievements for these new modes, as well as leaderboards for every mode in the game, including Hardcore mode and Virgil's Bloody Palace.
Wow.
So, this is actually, like, a full reworking of the game in a lot of ways.
So I have two reactions to that. The first one is that maybe with all this work they're putting into DMC Definitive Edition, Ninja Theory will actually learn how to make a good action game. And the second thing is...
You know, I prefer the original Devil May Cry series, but DMC was damn close.
Really? I thought it was, like, the easiest action game, like, out there, even more than, like... You know, Bayonetta and stuff. I thought it was, like, very...
It was easy, certainly, but that doesn't mean it was necessarily bad. And the game was, well, you know, the combat system was mostly well-designed. It just had a few flaws that really prevented it from achieving what it could have achieved.
Okay. And I guess the other thing is that I know a lot of people complained about the character of Dante, but I guess you never play stories... You never play games for story anyway, so with all of these gameplay changes making it so similar to the classic core series, like, you probably will be like, whatever, skip cutscene.
And
my Dante looks like old Dante, so I'm just gonna pretend it's old Dante.
Well, and you know, something else that's really exciting is during the reveal trailer, that we also got a brief teaser for something called Devil May Cry 4 Special Edition, which is apparently going to be coming to PlayStation 4 and Xbox One in summer of 2015. The most exciting part of that is that the teaser they gave had the Devil May Cry 3 style Virgil with a new voice clip teasing his appearance in this version of the game. This is, of course, exciting, as Virgil is a huge fan-favorite character. His story was left kind of hanging at the end of previous games in the series, and the return of Virgil would be a big deal for a lot of Devil May Cry fans. So, you know, between the DMC Definitive and Devil May Cry 4 Special, Devil May Cry fans, for the first time in a long time, it feels like we have a lot to look forward to.
Yeah, I guess so. Fans of Shiren the Wanderer 5, who own Vitas, will be happy that SpikeTunesoft is developing Shiren the Wanderer 5 Plus for Vita. It's an expanded version of the DS game that has widescreen graphics, trophies, and new dungeons.
Oh, excellent.
PlayStation Now is going to be coming to Samsung smart TVs in a move that not many people maybe expected because, you know, Samsung and Sony TVs. All you'll need, like other smart TVs with PlayStation Now, is a DualShock 4 controller. And you will have to have a good wallet because they haven't changed the prices as far as I know.
We also have word here that Killer Instinct Classic for the Xbox One is getting a patch to add online multiplayer.
Aww.
So for those of you like myself who still think that old Killer Instinct is a lot of fun, let's look forward to playing online together soon.
Woohoo!
We also got word that Arc System Works is making a new music game based around the Blaze Blue character Ragna the Blood Edge. It's going to be a mobile phone game released on Android and iOS in January in Japan. Please look forward to it.
Please tell us what the title is called.
Eat, Beat, Mr. Dead Spike.
Now I see why you didn't want to read it.
We also have word here that the soundtracks to Pokemon Alpha Sapphire and Pokemon Omega Ruby are now available for purchase on iTunes.
Lovely. It's 160 songs, all for $9.99.
$9.99? Are you out of your mind?
Ah!
We also have word here that the well-loved BioWare RPG, Star Wars Knights of the Old Republic, is now available for purchase on Android devices.
Those are the droids you're looking for.
In other news, Shadowrun Returns will be returning to Kickstarter in January 2015. Developer Harebrained Schemes, which is probably not the best name for a studio that's working via crowdfunding, is going to do an expansion to Shadowrun Returns, and they're going to be going to Kickstarter in January to do it. If you, like myself, loved Shadowrun Returns, this is definitely one to keep your eye out for.
Interesting. The latest Telltale game is going to be Minecraft Story Mode, which will be an episodic narrative-driven game series based in Minecraft's blocky world. Please expect it to be similar to Tales of the Borderlands, Game of Thrones, The Wolf Among Us, and The Walking Dead.
This will be coming in 2015 to the PC, Mac, mobile devices, and Xbox and PlayStation console platforms.
I know a lot of 8 and 9-year-olds who will probably be buying this. And, you know, other people too.
All right, well, with all that having been said, it's time for us to move on to this week's discussion, taking a look at 2014, the year in gaming.
And it's been quite a year. That's kind of just a neutral, you know, assessment of it, but, I mean, it's been a busy year here on the SS Game Buoy.
Yeah, so you're quite right. It's been quite a year for news. As we typically tend to do in our year-end wrap-ups, before we talk about, you know, what I'm sure you're all waiting for, our games of the year, we wanted to talk a little bit about what we felt were the top 10 news stories of 2014.
Yeah, and not like top 10, like, oh, the best stories, just the biggest stories.
The ones that we felt were biggest. And the biggest, bar none, is of course the Gamergate controversy. Or as we lovingly refer to it, Grommergoop.
Grommergoop.
This is of course the unfortunate circumstance wherein a certain group of privileged male gamers have been pretty consistently and unrelentingly harassing female and minority voices within the games industry.
Under the guise of ethics in games journalism.
Yeah. This really stings for me, of course, because I have actually been of the belief for a long time that games journalism is broken and needs to be fixed. We've talked about that countless times here on
Game. We had a segment called Loltaku Lol of the Week.
Yeah, so to see that message being co-opted for the sake of harming female and minority voices in the games industry, something which, you know, I think we need these voices in gaming. I think we need them super, 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 super bad. This whole thing makes me sick.
Yeah, and this was a very disturbing turn in the, you know, the trend where we were seeing female developers and, you know, members of the industry starting to speak up. And, you know, hashtag one reason why, and you're starting to challenge the rampant sexism, and this is just like a step, I don't want to say a step backwards, but, you know, one more obstacle that
absolutely
doesn't need to be there.
It almost feels like pushback, like, how dare you speak up, like, I don't know, I find it really gross, I think it's disgusting, I think it's the exact wrong direction for the industry to go. And certainly I appreciate that for the most part, developers and people in the games industry are not a part of Gamergate. But unfortunately, you know, there have been a couple of companies and studios that have really catered
and
to that audience.
And some Video Game Award winning, personalities of the year and such. And, you know, we here at Game Buoy.
That just really sticks in your craw, doesn't it?
Yeah. We here at Game Buoy just want to be very clear. We do not at all support Grommergoop. People's personal details have been leaked out. People's, private romantic lives have been leaked out. People have been tormented on Twitter when their pets have passed away. Like, all sorts of disgusting things. And, you know, then anytime it's challenged, it's like, oh, that wasn't us. We're not associated with that. But, you know, the evidence clearly, yeah, I almost don't want to give it more airtime.
Well, then let's move forward to a controversy that we are calling Poopysoft. Of course, you know, I say that, like, this is an Ubisoft issue, but really it reflects a larger industry trend that a lot of people have commented on this year.
Yeah, just, you know,
that
unfortunately.
That is the release of quote-unquote unfinished or broken games.
Yeah, and unfortunately, Ubisoft has kind of been front and center with the Assassin's Creed Unity kerfluffle. You know, I saw a great tweet over the Christmas holiday where there was one of those, you know, little wind-up mouth, chatter-mouth toys with googly eyeballs on it, and it said, I got an Assassin's Creed Unity action figure.
And that's really, to me, the saddest thing about this. You know, we're seeing Microsoft handle the Halo issue pretty well. Ubisoft, unfortunately, was not so quick nor so generous in dealing with people who were disappointed with Assassin's Creed Unity. They released a broken game that, for a lot of people, was not possible to enjoy,
mm-hmm.
and ultimately only compensated the people who had already bought the season pass for the DLC for the game, since they're ultimately not going to be doing DLC beyond what was already finished, as we understand it.
Right.
So, a lot of people basically just bought this game and were then told by Ubisoft, well, gonna have to wait until we get around to patching it to play it. So, that's one that for me really sticks in my craw.
Yeah, you know, the folks over at Horde House a few weeks ago had a great discussion about this, and it's really interesting to think of, you know, a lot of people are blaming the, you know, the developers, the programmers, the people actually working on the game, but, you know, they have to answer to the higher ups, and, you know, there's such a push in a lot of these AAA studios for, you know, oh, pre-orders, release date, and that's why, you know, like, when things get delayed at Nintendo, it's just like, oh, well, you know, they do it because they want to put out a quality product.
And, you know, we talked about this here on the show a little bit, but basically, to me, the Assassin's Creed Unity issue is just sort of the inevitable end result of what happens when you start announcing release dates for these huge games years before they're, you know, even halfway done. They have, you know, their internal projections that are like, this is our game for November 14, 2014.
Right.
You know they must have set that date back in 2012. And, you know, it ultimately did get pushed back 1 week, but 1 week was not a long enough time for them to really fix it.
And, you know, this isn't Assassin's Creed buoy, but I think, you know, when we're seeing franchises have yearly releases, I mean, Activision's doing a little different with, like, three Call of Duty studios and such, you know, but...
Ubi has multiple Assassin's Creed studios.
But, you know, like, there's also something to be said when these games weren't being pumped out yearly. You know, but anyways, it's not Assassin's Creed buoy, but unfortunately, Assassin's Creed is kind of at the front and center, and, you know, I think a lot of people are kind of a little skeptical about Ubisoft now, which is unfortunate, because they do put out good games from time to time.
Absolutely. The next big news story, of course, was the PlayStation 4's phenomenal sales numbers.
Yep, they won the console wars.
And, you know, to me, the sort of cherry on top of that story is, of course, that back in the summer, the head of PlayStation was basically just like, we don't know why people are buying our console like this. And, like, that they really had to double down on content production so that this huge audience has something to consume.
Yeah, that's a good point, because, you know, we were talking early on that really we felt here at Game Buoy that the Xbone had a lot more in terms of, you know, exclusive content, and that early on it almost seemed like most of the big PS4 content for, you know, maybe for, like, our sort of audience would be more, like, on the indie games territory and not really so many big, you know, banner releases.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, I have to be honest, I still mostly feel that way. I still feel like the Xbox One has more titles, but, I mean, it is what it is. The market is speaking, and certainly at this point, developers are going to go where the money is.
I suppose so.
The next big story, of course, was Flappy Bird.
Yeah, nasty.
And, of course, the mysterious tale of its creator, Dong Nguyen.
Yeah, that was very interesting. You know, Flappy Bird being a huge success, spawning imitators, including Flappy Vog over at the Vog Network, Voice of Geeks Network.
Well, I mean, this game was like a cultural phenomenon. I would see people, you know, 40, 50-year-old people on my work commute every day, people who would I never see playing games on the train, playing Flappy Bird every day for weeks.
Yeah, and then all of a sudden, Mr. Nguyen, I'm sorry, I've never been able to pronounce that name, he just was like, this is too overwhelming, I'm pulling it from the store, he was actually receiving some death threats too, wasn't he? Which,
yes,
again,
he was.
Gross. Knock it off, gamers. Knock it off! But, you know, as far as I know, it's back, right? Is it back on the iOS store? All I know is that I saw Flappy Bird merchandise at Target the other day. Like, they have those little mystery packs where you can get a Flappy Bird inside, so...
Well, the original Flappy Bird is not available on the App Store for iOS anymore. Nguyen has released a new version of Flappy Bird exclusively for the Amazon Fire TV. This one is called Flappy Bird's Family, and that's where the mystery box figures that you had mentioned come from,
the
different colored Flappy Birds.
So I remember he said that he wanted to bring it back at some point, and that he was trying to take the addictive nature of it out so that people could still enjoy it without being addicted to it. But, like,
hell of a problem to have.
Right? I mean, he felt, like, really, like, guilty. And, like I said, I believe there were also some death threats in there as well. But
Yes, there were. There definitely were. The next big news story to me is that, you know, after years and years of doomsaying and naysayers, we saw subscription numbers for paid MMOs go up in a big way. You know, World of Warcraft is back up to big numbers. Of course, Final Fantasy XIV, last I heard, had several million users at this point. So this really, to me, was a big news story in terms of, you know, a lot of people have been predicting for a long time that the MMO market would not support subscription-based MMOs, and the reality of the marketplace is showing that that is not true. You just have to make a game good enough that people feel comfortable paying for it.
Definitely, and you know, like, I think it really helps that the developers are listening in the case of Blizzard and Square Enix, you know, addressing concerns and issues that have been with previous patches and versions of the game, and, you know, trying to continually make the game more engaging and you know, bring back people. And I think the last number that I heard was about 3 million for, or very close to 3 million for Final Fantasy XIV, which is huge. I mean, I think at its height, the Old Republic Star Wars had like about a million. So, I mean.
Yeah, it's really just very impressive. And you know, something that, on the tip of what you were saying, something that I heard Rob say over on Horde House a few weeks ago.
And we're giving them lots of free publicity today.
Is that both WoW and Final Fantasy XIV are sort of feeding off of each other in a really interesting way. And I feel like both XIV and WoW are better games for it. You know, I think both games have really had to step up in order to be competitors to each other, and I really feel like the MMO marketplace is better for that quote-unquote rivalry.
Yeah.
Of course, the next big news story, and how could we not talk about this, was the $2.5 billion that Microsoft paid to buy Minecraft from Mojang, or more appropriately, to buy Mojang from Marcus Persson.
Yep.
You know, this was obviously a huge deal. A lot of people were very, very interested in how this purchase was going to affect Minecraft titles coming to PlayStation platforms, for example. As we've seen so far, it hasn't affected them at all.
I mean, it's probably more money in Microsoft's pocket, so why would they, you know, not, why would they turn down that money?
Yeah, in a lot of ways, Minecraft is the biggest game to kids since Mario.
Yeah.
You know, we're at the point now where across all platforms, they have sold nearly 60 million units of this game.
That's nuts.
So it's definitely one of the best-selling video games
of all time. I mean, just who would have thought when, you know, like, I never really jumped on the Minecraft mine train, but, you know, I remember you were playing it for a while. A lot of our Hunty Bunch were playing it. And, you know, it was just, even back then it was free, right? It was just was it in beta or, you know, it was just a PC release?
It wasn't free per se. You know, you could download it and play it without paying for it, but you really were supposed to buy it from Mojang's site.
Right, just to see it, like, totally transformed to this phenomenon. I mean, you see, like, Minecraft toys in any toy aisle in any store. Like, a huge phenomenon for kids. And, I mean, it's, you know, I joke a lot that it's like, oh, it's a kid's game. But, you know, that's rather them playing games where they get to build and create and fight off innocent blocky zombies than, you know, playing things with prostitutes and drug deals.
Yeah. I enjoy Minecraft myself. I don't play it a ton. Like, I go through these periods where, like, for a week, I will be super into it, and then, okay, I built whatever my plan was, and now I'm gonna take a break for a while.
Well, you can play story mode soon.
Yeah, I won't be doing that. But the thing is, again, like you said, for kids, I love that they have, that there's a popular game that is about creativity and building. It's not about violence or exploitation. I just think it's really great, and I love the fact that Microsoft paid $2.5 billion for it, because that is a hell of an idea, and you know they're going to treat it like the crown jewel of their IP collection if they paid that much money for it.
Yeah, and speaking of Notch and money, did you hear about how he outbid, he outbid Kanye and Kim for a mansion? I think it was Kanye and Kim.
No, bitch, that was Jay and Bae.
Oh, snap, and you know how much money that Beyonce self-titled made last year.
So yeah, it's, you know, it's just, it's absolutely phenomenal. I certainly think he deserves every cent of it. That is a great example of a game that, you know, it continued to be supported post-release. He was super involved with the fan base, made sure to, you know, work in designs and ideas that the fans wanted. And I just think the overall package turned out incredible. I think Minecraft is a great game, even if it's not really for me all the time. And I'm stoked about this. I can't wait to see what happens with this IP.
Yeah.
The next story, of course, was the several-month saga that was going on with Twitch TV that ultimately ended with them announcing in September 2014 that they were acquired by Amazon.com for just shy of $1 billion.
Right, that was a surprise because a lot of people, you know, thought that Google was going to buy them. I mean, Google was definitely putting an offer on the table. They, you know, everyone was like, oh, YouTube, Twitch, blah, 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 you know. And so it was really, I think, a surprise for a lot of people that Amazon jumped on. Although, you know, Amazon's really trying to, you know, grow its, you know...
gaming portfolio.
Thank you, yes. You know, with the Fire console coming and all of that sort of thing.
Yeah, I mean, you know, although we're not really going to talk about it here today, another big news story in 2014 was when Amazon announced on February 5th that they had acquired Double Helix Games.
Yeah, and then Microsoft was like, oh, better find someone else to continue work on Killer Instinct.
Yeah, but I mean, you say that with like a sad sound, but Killer Instinct, you know, now that we're in the age of it being handled by Iron Galaxy Studios, Killer Instinct is still doing pretty well.
Oh, yeah, yeah, I'm just saying that. I'm sure that was a moment of panic for Microsoft, being like, oh...
Yeah, yeah. And then, you know, the next story was probably a little bit smaller to the rest of the video game world, but to us here on GameBuoy.org...
GameBuoy.org!
It was a really big deal, and that is, of course, that... one of our favorite games of all time, Vib Ribbon, finally got an official release in North America. Obviously, you know, we talked about that game basically every week from the time E3 happened until it actually hit.
Right.
We had all kinds of teases and all kinds of hints, and when it ultimately did happen, that was a very, very special time for us.
And you know, the PS3 version supports the disc-changing CD music stage generating feature, for lack of a better term.
There is no better term for that.
You know, the only unfortunate thing is that if you have your PS3 hooked up to an HDTV, you know, you're gonna deal with the HD lag, but almost a reason to hook up a PS3 to an old CRT TV. Vib Ribbon is worth it.
Ah, you know, I hadn't even thought about that. I have this on my PS3. It didn't even occur to me to connect my PS3 to an old SD set.
Of course, you still have your original release of Vib Ribbon, so...
I do, but I bought it to support the game.
Yeah.
And last but certainly not least, something that has become a big news story in the last couple weeks, and I think is going to continue to be
one as we go
into
2015. Yeah, and definitely a lot of GameBuoy followers and listeners have been posting about this on Twitter.
This is what we call the Amiibo Oh No Woes.
Amiibo Oh No Woes.
Obviously, Nintendo released its line of Amiibo figures last month, coinciding with the release of Super Smash Bros. For Wii U.
Mm-hmm.
And rather unexpectedly to most people, Amiibo has been a huge hit in the retail space.
Yes.
Most of the figures are selling out pretty much as soon as they're stocked. All of the less popular characters, which, again, Nintendo has been very clear about all year, they were going to probably get short-packed and get limited production runs, are basically selling out the moment they hit shelves.
Or Amazon.
Oh, yeah, well, Amazon is selling out of them even while they're still in the pre-order phase. In fact, every website is. There are entire websites now dedicated to just hunting down, like, what sites have Amiibo in stock for pre-order.
It takes me back to the, like, where can I find a Wii? Wii Tracker or whatever that was?
Exactly. It's exactly like that. So, you know, Nintendo has caught lightning in a bottle once again, and Amiibo is huge, and it doesn't appear to be going nowhere.
Mm-hmm. And I'm just sad that I can't find a Captain Falcon.
I think there's still hope for you on that. Let's keep our fingers crossed.
I do have to say that this has kind of discouraged me from trying to catch them all, to borrow from another Nintendo franchise. But, I mean, I guess that's probably good, because otherwise that would be lots and lots and lots of money. Not that I'm judging people who have them all. You go, Glen Coco. Or Gwen Coco.
All right, well, let's move forward to what I'm sure all of our fans have been waiting for.
The big 2014 games that we missed?
Ah! No, well, we're going to talk about our top 10 games of 2014. But the intro to that is to talk about some of the big titles that we missed, so
right.
That if someone is curious why it's not on one of our lists...
why didn't you put that game on your list?
Well, for me, and I'll start this off and I'll give an example...
Our listeners wouldn't be like that.
The big game that I missed in 2014 is that I still haven't played Captain Toad Treasure Tracker.
Oh, me either. I missed out on it.
And for a lot of people, it is Game of the Year material. I'm hearing it brought up a lot in these conversations.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I definitely have to say, I'm looking forward to playing the game. I have no doubt that it is every bit as good as the internet says
yeah.
it is. I just haven't gotten around to playing it yet because I've been super, super busy pretty much continuously since it released.
Same here.
So, you know, there's no snub on our part. We're not ignoring it. We just haven't gotten around to it yet. Slaggy, I know that you have quite a few games you missed. Why don't we go down that list real quick?
Yeah, I'm not going to really talk too much about them other than, you know, there's some that you've talked about on air. There's some that, you know, I had expressed interest in, just haven't gotten around to it. Fantasia Music Evolved came out in the fall. Sunset Overdrive came out a few months ago. I still really want to play both of those on my Xbox One. I have not had a chance to really play any Destiny or Titanfall, but, you know, I recognize that those are both really, really good robo-shooter games, for lack of a better term. I missed out on the Halo Master Chief Collection, although I guess the only thing I've really missed out on so far is a chance at the free ODST. I did miss out on the 3DS release of Shantae and the Pirate's Curse, so, you know, I'm a little late. I'm sure that would have definitely earned a spot if it hadn't, because, you know, Shantae, you stay. Probably the biggest one, though, it was because I had a really difficult time finding this in stores. I really was set on the retail package, and also, you know, just kind of busy, you know, financially as well, kind of tied up. And that was Bayonetta 2. And I have to say thank you, Cat Spike, for your generous Christmas gift.
You're welcome.
Bayonetta 2. I am sure that if I had had the time to play it, you know, in the past week since you gave that to me, that it would be, you know, no doubt Game of the Year material, but I can't say, oh, Game of the Year, and I haven't played it yet, but, you know, definitely looking forward to it.
So my other big game that I missed this year that I wanted to play was actually Borderlands, the pre-sequel.
Yeah, we didn't even get a chance to play it at GamerX 2. It had a huge lineup for it at the Gearbox booth. Well, the 2K Games booth, more specifically.
Yeah, I made it over there, and I ended up playing the WWE game they had. The line for a pre-sequel was just too long. Anyway, though, you know, everything I've heard about the game sounds great, and I'm looking forward to playing it. I just have not had time yet.
Mm-hmm. When you said Borderlands, I was going to be like, oh no, Borderlands 2 for Vita? That was just unfortunate.
Yeah, yeah. Did you have any others that you missed?
You know, I'm sure there are some out there, but, you know, those were kind of the ones that came to my mind. Like you said, Captain Toad was, again, a big one for me that, you know, I'm definitely looking forward to. Oh, Persona Q.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I actually haven't got to that one either.
So, and Persona Ultimax.
I did play that. In fact, I have a blow-up Teddy
bag. I see your Teddy punching bag.
I just finally picked that up recently, so I can't really speak to its overall quality. Although, again, I'm sure it's amazing. I'm a big fan of what Arc System Works does with their fighting games. I really enjoyed it. I think it's a good game, and you can definitely play it if you want. You know, I can boot it up as soon as we're done recording.
Lovely.
Excellent. All right, well then, why don't we start tearing into our top 10? But we have one more obstacle before we really quite get to that, and that is our honorable mention. I real quick want to just do a quick little list of games for each of us. Things we played this year that really resonated for us, really great experiences, but that just didn't quite get into top 10 territory. Sagi, if you'd like to start with yours?
Yeah, this is a game that if I had the time to get around to finishing it, probably would have made top 10. That's Infamous Second Son. You know, I played a little bit of the first Infamous. It didn't really grab me a lot. Infamous Second Son really was well designed. A lot of fun to play. I just, you know, didn't get the chance to put a good amount of time into it. And, you know, I wouldn't feel right saying it's Game of the Year material without having, you know, really put a lot of time into it.
I respect that. In fact, most of my honorable mentions are games that either I loved but weren't quite top 10, or games I started and loved but just haven't had time to get back to yet. And so for me, and I'm just going to go down the whole list here because I have like six of them. The big one is Strider. This was, of course, Double Helix-developed revival of Capcom's classic IP.
Before they got snatched up by Amazon.
Yep. I'm a huge fan of the Strider IP going back historically. I even talk about it here on the show.
About that a lot leading up to its release.
So, you know, and I thought the game turned out great. Of course, the horror sensation Five Nights at Freddy's was great. I absolutely love what Platinum Games did with The Legend of Korra. It's just unfortunate it got overshadowed for me by Bayonetta 2.
Mm-hmm.
From a gameplay perspective, I thought Legend of Korra was great, but then I played Bayo 2 and it was like, I don't really want to go back to that after all.
Oh.
Of course, Kingdom Hearts 2.5 HD Remix is a huge one for me. Amazing experience, but ultimately I decided that I had played too many great games to let an HD remake be one of my top 10.
Mm.
And last and most surprisingly would probably have to be Zelda Musou, Hyrule Warriors. Quite unexpectedly, just a really great game and a really great take on the Musou formula. And, you know, I also want to give a special mention to Super Time Force, which is a game that I absolutely, absolutely love, but I haven't finished yet because I don't want to be done with it.
Aww. I had one more, and that's Hearthstone. Honestly, I forgot that that came out this year briefly because I remember it, you know, being in beta at the end of last year, and you know, I definitely loved it. It was, you know, it was a Game of the Year contender for the Video Game Awards. You know, I haven't put enough time into it, you know, compared to some of the other things on my list. And, you know, I mean, it was very close to making the top 10. There were more games this year than I had room to put on there.
Absolutely, yeah. All right, well, with all that having been said, I think it's time for our top 10 of 2014!
Woo, woo, woo!
So, who started off last year?
Oh, man, If I knew you were going to ask that, I would have listened to last year's episode.
If I had known I was going to ask that, I would have listened myself.
Let's just start out by saying that, you know, this year had a lot of good games.
Yeah, this 2014 has been an amazing year for gaming. Well, you know, Slaggy, why don't you get us started with your number 10 top game of 2014?
You know, it's funny because my number 10 is probably one of the games that, you know, towards the end of this year, I put more time into than anything else. The only reason that it's number 10 and not number 1 is that it's an expansion, and that is World of Warcraft Warlords of Draenor. You know, we had a whole episode about WoW just a month ago, you know, a little over a month ago, and, you know, talking about all of the really addictive features, garrisons, you know, the really fun zones, you know, just they've really hit a good balance this time. And, you know, I'm still playing every day, working on a Death Knight, my Death Knight, you know, one of my main characters since Wrath of the Lich King. And, you know, still really having a good time. Haven't gone further than LFR for rating, but, you know, definitely looking forward to putting more time into that game.
Excellent. Yeah, that's great. You know, obviously, I'm a big fan of Warlords of Draenor. I think it's a stupendous expansion, and definitely one of the best gaming experiences I've had this year. It's just, again, there have been so many amazing gaming experiences mm-hmm. this year. I wouldn't even know where to start and stop.
Right. Captain Spike, what's your number 10 game of the year?
My number 10 is Titanfall. And, you know,
I came in like a Titanfall.
Oh, yes. You know, Titanfall, and I've talked about this a lot, not really my normal kind of game. But Titanfall was the first time in an MMO since GoldenEye where, for me, I just absolutely fell in love. I couldn't stop playing. And
sorry,
I still...
do you mean FPS?
Pardon?
You said MMO. Did you mean FPS?
Oh, yes. FPS, not MMO. LOL. But, you know, it's, again, I just keep coming back to it, even still, you know, it's been almost a year since that game came out, and I still play it fairly regularly.
I mean, I still have a lot of fun with it. A testament to its appeal that you put it on at parties, and people will just come in and be like, this is hella fun.
Yeah, absolutely, and it's exactly that kind of game.
And
the
I think
hook
it's,
is obvious,
yeah.
it's fun even just to move around. Obviously, who isn't here for giant robots?
Yeah, I mean, I think that, you know, the giant robot, Gundam, Evangelion, Pacific Rim, like, you know, it has a lot of crossover. Power Rangers, even, you know, like, that people who shy away from FPS might be like, ooh, giant robots.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. Slaggy, what was your number 9 best game of 2014?
My number 9 is one that is...
Number 9.
That, you know, a great game, lots of polish to it, but, you know, the reason that it's number 9 is that it's a remake, and that's Pokemon Alpha Sapphire and Omega Ruby, but, you know, I played Alpha Sapphire, so they go together.
Come on, Natch!
And, you know, like I've talked about a couple weeks ago, you know, to some of the little polish that they added to what a lot of people consider the weakest entries in the series have really made it a lot of fun. I'm having a lot of fun with cosplay Pikachu. Like, at first I was like, ugh, really? And I was like, oh, I caught an Electrike. I was gonna, like, level up, you know, not any old Pokemon. But then I got cosplay Pikachu, and she has, like, a little Dutch lady outfit. And what's really cool about cosplay Pikachu is that, she can learn different moves depending on what cosplay she's wearing. So it's like, oh, I want her to have an ice move, so I'm gonna put her in her little Dutch outfit.
Okay, you know, I haven't really messed with cosplay Pikachu yet, but what you're saying really makes me want to.
And I'm doing Pokemon contests, which I never would have messed with before. So, you know, it's definitely, you know, I've seen a lot of criticism that, you know, it's not a big step up from X and Y, but X and Y was such a huge step up for the franchise that, you know...
Yeah, I mean, to expect two steps up like that in such a short period of time.
I mean, but I would say that Nintendo and Game Freak have really elevated the original experience. You know, I'm just having a great time. I might pick up Omega Ruby just because I'm really having a good time. And it's been a while since I've picked up both versions, so, you know.
That's great.
What is your number 9 game of the year, Captain Spike?
My number 9 was Donkey Kong Country Tropical Freeze.
We never did get around to making a Tropical Freeze recipe.
Yeah, we never did. You're quite right.
I remember
right.
Some listeners had even given us some recipes. I feel very bad now.
Well, you know, there's still one party left this year. Maybe we'll have to make that listener-approved recipe for New Year's this year.
Indeed.
You know, obviously, I have a little bit of a weird history with Donkey Kong Country as a series. I've talked about that here on the show. I'm have never been a big Donkey Kong Country fan. But I thought Donkey Kong Country Returns nailed it. I thought it was an amazingly well-designed game. And really, I have to say, Tropical Freeze is a better game than that.
Wow.
The platforming is incredible. The level design is nuts. The bosses are actually really fun to play. The music is out of this freaking world. It is just a hit on every level. So I really, really give it up to Donkey Kong Tropical Freeze. I'm seeing a lot of people including it on their end of the year wrap-ups this year, and I'm very happy because the game deserves a hell of a lot more love than it gets.
Yeah, Retro has done a really good job. They did Returns as well, right?
Yes.
Retro did, yeah. I mean, I think they've really done a good job, you know, really making these DK games a lot of fun.
How about you? What is your number 8?
My number 8 is Super Smash Brothers for 3DS and Wii U. A little more the Wii U version, I have to be honest. But, you know, just the fact that, you know, it's a title that, you know, has two versions, two consoles that, you know, each have their own unique draws. But, I mean, really what it is that this is definitely the first Smash that I played. It's a nice balance. I cut myself off. It's not the first Smash I played. Go back and listen to the Smash episode that we just did if you want to learn more about that. But, you know, this is really, after spending more time with it, the first Smash that I feel like is accessible to me. Melee was just always a little bit like, oh, I can't do it. And then, you know, Brawl was just like, you know, too easy mode and that, like, you know, people really didn't care for it, and you know, so it's a good balance for me. I'm actually really finally starting to learn how to play the game properly, like actually getting it to land some smashes and not just falling off the edge. So you know, I'm definitely looking forward to putting more time into it and getting better at the game. You know, one of the things that's great about a game like Smash Brothers is this, like, oh, I couldn't finish it because I didn't get to put 60 hours into it. It's like, you know, I put in some time and, you know, it's probably one of those games that because it's not like an RPG grind, you do end up putting more time into it than you would, you know, an RPG or, you know, a action adventure game where you're like, okay, I'm at the save point. It's just like, no, pick up a match and then, oh, we just played for 5 hours.
My number 8 is Infamous Second Son. You know, I've been a fan of the Infamous series since the first game on the PlayStation 3. You know, I enjoyed Infamous 2. I enjoyed Infamous Festival of Blood. But for me, Second Son is by far, like, the high point of the series. Beautiful. My one problem with it is that it's a little on the short side, but I love that you get, you know, multiple power sets, which that alone increases, like, what's going on in the game from a play standpoint several times over from the previous iterations of the series. And, you know, I enjoyed the story. I actually really did find myself enjoying, like, the graphic fidelity. You know, I just overall thought it was a great game. In fact, you know, I liked it so much it became my first ever platinum trophy on the PlayStation platform. It's the first PlayStation platform game where I did everything to the point that I got all the trophies. So that, to me, should speak to how well this game really clicked for me.
That's awesome.
Slag McWaggy, what's your number 7?
My number 7 is Hyrule Warriors. I give it up to Hyrule. I'm a Hyrule Warrior. The thing about Hyrule Warriors for me is that I've never really been super into the Musou games. I mean, they've been fun, but I've never really been interested enough to pick one up myself. But the polish that was put into Hyrule Warriors, kind of like what you were talking about earlier when you mentioned One Piece Musou 3, when you were talking about the One Piece games. You know, just all the little touches they made to make it feel like it was in the world of Hyrule just, like, really sold it for me. And, you know, just a lot of fun. The ability to play as all those other characters is like, yes! So, even though Zelda U looks like it's going to be a little more traditional, I mean, playing as Link and such, I hope they continue to put out experiences like this so I can be like, yes, slaying as Impa, yes, God!
My number 7 has a lot in common with my number 10. And that is, of course, because my number 7 is a game that many people called their biggest disappointment of 2014.
Yeah, a lot of people being like, oh, I'm glad people are not talking about that anymore. And I'm like, oh, really?
I'm talking, of course, about Destiny. You know, and I have to say, most people's biggest faults with Destiny are completely fair. Like, I see a lot of people complaining about the wasted potential of the game's storyline. I see people complaining about, like, the way gear works. You end up getting a piece of gear and using it for weeks until you finally get an upgrade. And for a lot of people, you know, the sort of hamster wheel of gearing doesn't move fast enough. They wanted more story out of it. Those are not things that bother me. I'm perfectly fine with it not having a super cloying story. I think the setting is really cool. I like the setting a lot. And that's enough for me. I like the pacing of the gear. As someone who plays a lot of PvP, which, by the way, is quite unexpected, but I blame Titanfall for that. I find that I actually really like using the same gear for a long period of time because I know what my weaknesses and strengths are. You know, having my gear equipped and keeping it and having it for a while, I've come to rely on, like, my cooldowns lasting a certain amount of time before I can throw my grenade again or what have you. And so for me, it's been a really great gameplay experience. I still really enjoy firing it up and playing. I haven't gotten into any of the raids yet because they're so hardcore and I just don't have the time for, you know, 6 hours guaranteed of gameplay time. But I do hope to do that at some point because I'm told that there are really intense emergent experiences that happen in those raids. Supposedly they're really incredibly designed.
Nice.
Slaggy, how about you? What was your number 6?
My number 6 game of the year is Fantasy Life. This is one that I've seen a lot of people talking about, and you know, I mentioned I picked it up back when I got a good 3DS deal at Target, and I'm really glad I did. You know, a lot of people don't realize that level 5 started off with RPG, so, you know, it's not just like, oh, they decided to double in the RPG. You know, they were the, we really need to do a level 5 episode, don't we?
Maybe.
Because they did, some of the recent Dragon Warrior games, didn't they?
Yeah, they did. They did Dragon Quest 8 and 9.
Yeah, so anyway, you know, level 5 is not a newbie when it comes to RPGs. They did Ni No Kuni, which, you know, a lot of people really loved. I never got around to finishing, but, you know, was definitely interesting. But Fantasy Life is really cute. What I love about Fantasy Life even more than, you know, the lives and the quests and all that is that it's just a really funny game, you know, like the writing is just really snappy and clever and, you know, just it really tickles me. And, you know, on top of that, just offering a great game experience and, you know, being an RPG that you can just play almost like an Animal Crossing, like you don't have to feel like you rush through the story. So, like, it's a lot of fun, and, you know, I definitely, like, I want to, like, have all the lives, basically.
My number 6 was Shovel Knight. You know, I've been a big proponent of Shovel Knight since it was first since the first Kickstarter pitch was made for game, I have been on board that ship, waving that flag, and I have to tell you, when the finished product came down the pipeline, I was not disappointed. I think it's an amazing game. It calls back to some of my favorite aspects of old 8-bit game design. If I had one complaint, and this is controversial, but I do think it's a little too easy. But, you know, I think it's a great game. I think it's incredible. And I want more content now. So I hope that they get some, you know, DLC together for that.
Yeah.
Well, they had announced in the Kickstarter that they're going to be doing more content. I need it now. Slaggy, how about you give me your number 5?
My number 5 is Shovel Knight. You hit a lot of the points already. What I want to say is that...
Did you also think it was too easy?
No. It was just right for me. It reminded me, you know, I mean, this was the obvious comparison, but it really called back in particular to me to one of my favorite Capcom games, DuckTales.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
And I mean, it just, you know... just really hit the sweet spot. You know, a lot of people had complaints about Way Forward with DuckTales, but I would say that you know, if they ever did like a DuckTales 2, they might want to look at Yacht Club Games, because I mean, I thought that Way Forward did a great job with DuckTales Remastered. It felt a lot like DuckTales. I thought it was great, but I think that Shovel Knight just like really, really, really hit the nail on the head with the shovel.
My number 5 is Danganronpa, and I'm actually using that generically to refer to both Danganronpa 1 and Danganronpa 2.
Oh yeah, they both came out this year,
This year in North America, yeah. I love these games. I love their whole take on, like, visual novel meets, like, detective mystery. I'm super into it. I think a lot of people who enjoy the Phoenix Wright-style games would probably enjoy Danganronpa. There's a lot of fun writing. The mysteries are, like, legitimately fun to figure out, even if they're sometimes borderline nonsensical. It's never so nonsensical that you feel cheated, which is obviously very important in structuring a mystery. So I love it. I think it's an amazing experience, the Danganronpa games.
Yeah, and a lot of people talking about that as their Game of the Year candidate. So definitely I need to get around to it, too. I've been meaning to.
Well, in the meantime, how about you hit me with your number 4?
My number 4 is Theater Rhythm Final Fantasy Curtain Call. Or is it Theater Rhythm Curtain Call Final Fantasy?
Theater Rhythm the Final Fantasy Curtain Call.
Yeah, I had written it wrong in my notes. You know, I've just talked about this recently. I love the original Theater Rhythm Final Fantasy. I'm thrilled that they're expanding the Theater Rhythm franchise. You know, Curtain Call is just more of a great taste. It's like, you know, upgrading to supersize, really. So
since Curtain Call was my number 4, I'm just going to take this right from you and say I totally agree with what you're saying. The post-release support has also been amazing. They've added some really incredible songs via DLC. But even before the DLC, we were looking at, 200-plus songs?
Exactly.
Absurd.
It almost is like, oh, why did they put out the original one?
And the gameplay changes they made from the first one are also really fun, cool stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I can't speak highly enough of Final Fantasy Theater Rhythm Curtain Call. I think it's an amazing package.
I came in like a curtain call.
And anyone who's interested in rhythm games and has a 3DS that hasn't played this yet, get thee to a Target or eShop and buy it right now.
Yeah, Theater Rhythm is the hot new craze, y'all.
Hey. Well, with that having been settled, why don't you slap down your number 3 top game of 2014?
My number 3 2014 game is Bravely Default. You know, we've talked about this so much on air, but Bravely Default just is, you know, it's a classic JRPG experience, but also with some really compelling twists with, you know, the default and the brave and the flying fairy and the bravely
the default and the brave and the flying fairy and the pudding pops.
Anyway, you know, just really, you know, the music, the art, the story, just a modern gem. And, you know, I'm so thrilled for Bravely Second.
And, you know, I'm going to have to steal this one from you because my number 3rd is also Bravely Default. You know, I think it's amazing. I've talked about it here on the show. I think it's a bona fide revitalization of classic JRPG game design. I love the way the job system works. I enjoyed the story. I even liked the weird gimmick that most people hated starting in Chapter 5. That particular gimmick is one of my favorite gimmicks in storytelling. We've even talked about that here on the show quite a few times.
And can we talk about the little Farmville element.
Yeah, absolutely. Rebuilding Norende or whatever.
Yes, yes. Which, the first thing I thought of when Garrison's hit was like, ooh, Bravely Default.
Right? Yeah, just a lot of fun. I really enjoyed pretty much every aspect of Bravely Default. And I, like you, cannot wait for Bravely Second.
I'm so thrilled that it did well because, you know, we followed Bravely Default Flying Fairy ever since its Japanese release. And before that, I feel like, you know, the articles, hey, Square Enix, bring Bravely Default to US. Where is it? You know, so it was a long journey, but it did really well. And
yeah,
it ultimately exceeded
sales expectations, and it was an amazing game.
So yes, Square Enix, people like when you make classic JRPGs.
With that having been said, Slaggy, we're winding down. Why don't you give me your number two top game of 2014?
My number two top game of 2014 is Kirby Triple Deluxe. This game, just like, you know, I had no idea that it was the best Kirby game in years. And, you know, like the recent Kirby games haven't been, you know, bad, but I mean, this really feels like, you know, like, the true, like, classic Kirby games. Like, you know, the new powers are fun, the level design is great, just really clever, and not even to mention Kirby Fighters. And I haven't even done DDD Drum Dash yet. I've been so much engrossed in the, you know, the actual game and, you know, in Kirby Fighters that I haven't even played all the other modes. So just so much on one little game cart that, you know, really makes me look forward to the Kirby and the Rainbow Canvas. Am I getting that title right?
I believe you're right.
Yes. So, I mean, just really a renaissance for Kirby right now. Just really spot on.
Excellent. My number two is a game that you've already mentioned. It is Smash Brothers for Wii U and 3DS.
Of course.
Of course it is. You know, I've already seen some people very pessimistic about the longevity of Smash Brothers 4 in the competitive scene. But then, you know, just in the last couple weeks, people have started finding new gameplay techniques, like this, the perfect pivot technique, which is where you do, like, a slide dash dodge, but, like, change the direction you're facing mid-dodge so that you can immediately go into an attack without having to reposition. And I just think, like, this is really great. I think that this game is going to show it has a lot of depth. I think there's a lot to Super Smash Bros. 4. And, you know, unlike Brawl, which, again, you know, we've talked about this here on the Smash Buoy, basically.
Yeah.
You know, Brawl, you could tell within that first week or two that it was going to go stale. It just did not feel like Melee. I didn't constantly feel like I was enjoying it and getting better and finding cool new stuff. I feel that way with Smash Brothers 4 again. I love it, and, you know, like you were saying earlier, and this happened multiple times this weekend where I would sit down saying, I'm just going to play a quick game of Smash, and the next thing I know, six hours have passed, and I'm hungry because I skipped lunch.
Right? Like, you and your amiibo, man.
Oh, yeah, just tons of fun. I'm loving it, and I'm looking forward to playing Smash Brothers 4 for years to come. With that having been said, Slaggy, it's time for our Games of the Year. So, Slaggy, I have to know, what, for you, is Game of the Year 2014?
This might be a surprise, people, but probably won't. It's Mario Kart 8.
Oh, good pick.
You know, just like we talked about in our kart episode, this is the best of the series. And, you know, that's coming from someone who loved Double Dash, who loved 64. The track designs are spectacular. The DLC is fantastic. And, you know, I really hope they continue to support it for years to come. You know, I just, another game that I can pick up, and then 3 hours later, oh, I just did, you know, 100 races in Smash with other people in the Hunty Bunch.
You said in Smash?
I'm sorry, in Kart.
And no, you know, I definitely agree there with Kart 8. It definitely should, I probably should have given it an honorable mention or something, because I think it's a culmination of all the design lessons of the previous iteration of Kart. I think it's an amazing experience. And again, it feels very evergreen. That, like, mm-hmm. Smash Brothers 4 is a game I'll be playing years from now.
Right. And, you know, I love Mario Kart. You know, people who know me well probably wouldn't be surprised that this is my game of the year, but, you know, with the, kind of similar to what you were saying about Smash Brawl, with Cart Wii being kind of a disappointment in some ways, but still, you know, an okay game. You know, this is just really what the series needed, and just a spectacular, beautiful game. Like, oh my god, like, one of the prettiest looking games that I've ever played. Not that that's the only, you know, criteria I have, but just, you know, a pure cart experience, just exactly what I was looking for. Captain Spike, what's your number one game of the year 2014?
Surprising nobody. My game of the year 2014...
Flappy Bird? Oh my god!
...is Bayonetta 2. Of course. You know, I'm not even including the fact that Bayonetta 2 came with a port of Bayonetta 1, although certainly in real-world terms, that does make it an even better package.
Right.
I just think Bayonetta 2 is an absolute evolution of Bayonetta 1, which itself was already one of my favorite games of all time.
Mic drop.
Right? Like, I think that the character designs are better. I think that the gameplay is improved. I think the enemy encounter design is improved. I think Bayonetta 2 is better than Bayonetta 1 in basically every way. And Bayonetta 1, as you've heard me say countless times on this show, is, to me, one of the best designed games I've ever played. So, to take that as your base and to, like, kick it up a notch...
Yes, mama!
This is a game that, even though it isn't evergreen in the same context that a Mario Kart 8 is, or a Smash 4 is... I'll still be replaying Bayonetta 2 for years to come, just so that I can continue to have that experience and play in that world, and honestly just really play with the incredible depth that the combat system has.
I couldn't be more impressed. Game doesn't need to have, like, DLC support to be, to have replay value. Look at Demon's Crest.
Yeah.
You play that yearly.
Absolutely.
And so, like, the way that I am with original Legend of Zelda, I play that pretty much yearly, too.
Ew.
Rude!
Well, all right. Well, that's it for our games of the year. So let's start winding down the discussion. Let's talk about our gaming New Year's resolutions. Let's start that up with talking about our 2014 resolutions and how they went. Slaggy, refresh me. What was your resolution for 2014?
My resolution at the end of last year for this year was to make more time in my personal life for gaming. You know, at the end of last year, our 2013 gaming year in review, I talked about, you know, my recent move, a lot of life changes, and that had cut into my gaming time. At that point, I had not been playing WoW, and, you know, really missed out on a lot of good games that year.
And how would you say you did on that?
I think I did pretty well. I resubscribed to WoW for one thing. I mean, that's a big signifier of how much time I'm making for games in my life. I've bought a lot more games. I've finished a lot more games. I've, you know, started but not finished a lot more games, which, you know, sounds like not a lot, but even just, you know, the time to, you know, start them up, that's been a big change. And I definitely feel like it's had a positive impact on my, you know, the rest other parts of my life, because, you know, I have that fun gaming to go to, you know, and that I have the time to invest in it. And I think that the, you know, that I had made more work for myself, you know, when I was going through life transitions, and that I always had the time for it. I needed to not guilt myself for taking time.
All right. My resolution for 2014 was to buy fewer games, but finish more of the games I did buy.
I think relatively you did well.
And, you know, I did great.
Instead of, like, 200 games, you maybe bought 50?
No, I bought more than 50, but less than 200, so that's the important thing. I definitely bought fewer games, but the more important of those, the finish more part, I definitely did do that. I definitely played all the way through more games this year than I did last year. Last year was a real low point for me on that regard. I bought so many games, but finished so few of them. And now I look at this year, what I bought and what I finished, and, like, most of the games I played this year have two states. Like, either I bought it and it's still in its wrapping, or I played it and finished it.
Nice.
And I'm really happy with that. For me, that's the right way to be.
Good.
So that having been said, let's talk about our 2015 resolutions, primarily 1080p. No, but seriously, Slaggy, what is your resolution for 2015?
You know, I just have to say that I'm so dense that when you put that on the show notes, I was like, oh, are you going to get a 1080p TV? Is that your resolution this year for 1080p 60fps gaming? And then I was like, oh,
and
resolution.
Let it be said for the record, one of my TVs is a 1080p TV. You make me sound like I live in the Stone Age.
Hey, I only have a 720p, and I'm sure other people out there don't even have HDTV still, so...
Anyway, what is your resolution?
Well, people might have noticed that, let's see, out of all my top 10, most of them were on Nintendo consoles of some type. Pretty much, like, exclusively. You know, aside from, like, WoW, basically. So, my New Year's resolution is to play more, specifically more PS4 and Xbox games, but also, like, you know, Vita and such. I think that with a lot of what's coming next year, that'll definitely be easy to accomplish. I'm looking forward to a lot of, you know, non-Nintendo games, but, you know, just there were so many great things on Nintendo that I was like, sorry, you know? And it's to the point where there was so much good stuff on Nintendo that I didn't even get to, so. I'm hoping to diversify a little bit and dabble in the other consoles.
Excellent. That's great. And you know, it actually kind of ties in with my own resolution. Something I really woke up to in 2014, and I've talked about this here on the show, was that after years and years of really not being a part of that scene, I've really started dabbling in import gaming again. And you know, import gaming is something that I was always super interested in and super into. But, you know, one of those things that sort of, I guess I reached a point where it's like, okay, I don't have enough time in my life to be futzing with, you know, Japanese games and, you know, relearning a language that, you know, I still mechanically remember, but my vocabulary's got fairly weak at. But, you know, I've sort of had some life changes and, you know, I have a little bit more time than I used to. I don't have as many social obligations. So I've definitely picked back up at import gaming.
Your 3DS.
Yeah. I imported a whole console for it even. And, you know, I've been importing a lot more PlayStation family games.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's overall something I'm really excited about. I want to dig into more import games. And accordingly, I want to be able to talk to our audience about more import games. So, you know, I think that that's something to really look forward to.
Well, yeah, we are the show. We are your portal call for gaming news and views that maybe aren't on your radar.
But most definitely should be. And let's wrap this up properly now by talking about our most anticipated games, events, and predictions for 2015. Slaggy, what are the games you're most looking forward to for 2015?
Well, I'm going to start off with the Nintendo ones because, you know, there are definitely, like, this was a huge year for Nintendo. I think next year is going to be even bigger because you've got Mario Maker, you've got Mario Party 10, and Zelda U, maybe, hopefully, which all look really great. You know, those are just three of, you know, and that there's more Project Steam's coming, but, you know, those three are really what I'm super psyched for. You know, Mario Maker, like I've talked about in the news, you know, just so excited. Anytime we bring it up to, you know, make a Mario level, play Captain Spike's Mario levels, play your Mario levels, especially with all the different tile sets. Mario Party 10, I've been waiting for a new Mario Party forever. Always a good time.
It's going to have amiibo support.
And, you know, can't wait to see what they kind of build on from Nintendo Land with the, you know, the asynchronous gameplay multiplayer.
I hope they go in the direction of Mario Kart 8, where the DLC had non-Mario characters. I hope we start to see some non-Mario characters in Mario.
I'm like, oh, it's Samus and Captain Falcon.
Yeah, right? Oh, Ike and Link are visiting. Let's have a party with them.
Oh, yes. And Zelda U, you know, at first was a little concerned about, but after that surprise reveal of that, you know, gameplay footage at the Game Awards, I'm like, oh, mama, yeah. Other than that, I'm really pumped up for Roller Coaster Tycoon World, you know, promising to not be the shitstorm, pardon my language, that Tycoon 4 Mobile was. You know, it's going to have online multiplayer. We'll be able to finally have an online Game Buoy park that you can visit, and, like, different lands will be operated by Captain Bike and I. So, you know, just, like, everything that I've basically ever dreamed of for a Tycoon game, I'm hoping that it delivers. Persona 5, definitely excited for that. You know, it's, you know, I want more information. I want it now. And then one that was, I believe, due out this year, that never made it quite out this year, was Fable Legends. You know, kind of the Dungeons & Dragons style, so to speak. Fable experience. Like, I still really think that's going to be a lot of fun.
Excellent. I'm most looking forward to Final Fantasy Type-0 HD.
Ooh, good one.
You know, I've already played this game on the PSP, but I'm really looking forward to playing it in HD and getting that sexy Final Fantasy 15 demo with it. I definitely am looking forward to Dragon Quest Theater Rhythm. Well, whether it comes out here or not, I will certainly be buying it. I'm also really looking forward to whatever the 2015 Kingdom Hearts game turns out to be. And last but certainly not least, I'm really, really, really looking forward to Final Fantasy XIV Heavensward.
Right.
You know, they just finally showed off what the new race is going to be. It's like a dragon man. I think it looks super awesome. And it's really revitalized my interest in going back and playing that game more.
That's like, great.
I think it's very likely that I'll end up playing Final Fantasy XIV again soon.
Love it.
So, real quick, Slaggy, what is your most anticipated gaming event next year?
I don't know. I do have to say I'm looking forward to providing E3 coverage here on GameBuoy.org.
GameBuoy.org.
Which isn't, really like an anticipated event, because, you know, E3 always happens, but I'm interested to hear, you know, what the big announcements are going to be. You know, these past couple of years have just been like, oh, new consoles. So, you know, it'll be interesting to see what big bombs are dropped. I'm really, like, this isn't exactly an event, but I'm really interested to see, World of Warcraft is promising to have the next raid tier, the final raid tier in February. So I'm like, does that mean we're going to get a BlizzCon East or some type of bomb dropped? Or are they going to have like a, you know, announcement at some, you know, GDC or somewhere that we're getting a new expansion? So I'm kind of curious about that.
Oh, Overwatch.
If this raid tier really does hit on schedule, I'm almost expecting an E3 reveal.
Yeah, that'd be interesting. So, I forgot to mention Overwatch. Definitely looking
forward.
Yeah,
that's also one of my most anticipated games.
Gaming trend, maybe. I really hope that the Grommer Group BS, you know, dies out. I feel like it's starting to lose its steam. And, you know, I really hope that we are going to continue to see, you know, positive change in that direction.
Yeah.
Predictions? I don't know. Amazon Fire will come out and it'll just be whatever.
The event I'm really looking forward to is I want to see how the Game Awards continues to evolve.
Oh, good one.
I hope that next year they bring even more to the table than they did this year. I'm also really excited to see what Evo looks like this year.
Oh.
You know, the fighting game scene has been really revitalized in the last year or two. We definitely saw it reflected in part in the 2014 Evo competition, but I think the 2015 Evo competition may be even more energetic and exciting, because the fighting game community is just expanding at this point.
Yeah, so many great fighters coming out.
Well, yeah.
Remains to be seen if they will be Evo entries or not, but...
Yeah, absolutely. And my big prediction for 2015 is going to be that I think we're going to see Microsoft pull out all of the stops to try and catch up with the PS4.
I think we're going to see a
lot coming down the pipeline on the PS4.
Do you think we'll ever see
Xbox One this year?
Whether it, you know, I maybe it would just be in the form of an announcement. Do you think that Microsoft is going to try to pull out a mobile, not a Windows phone, but like a handheld device?
I don't think Microsoft has the room to fight a war on another front right now. I think they're going to double down on the Xbox One platform and probably money hat some exclusives, like what they tried to do with the 360 when they brought multiple Mistwalker games to the platform, Lost Odyssey and Blue Dragon being the easy ones. I think we're going to see a lot of that this year from
Well, they've already
Microsoft.
Got the Tomb Raider sequel, right?
Yeah, that's a good point. I think that's going to be a big trend we see this year. So.
Well, let's see. 2015, here we come.
All right. Well, with all that having been said, it's time for us to get into some hearsay with...
Rumor has it.
So last year, during the Tokyo Game Show,
man, I wonder
we
if Adele's going to have a new album next year. Maybe get some new bumper material.
So last year, we talked after Tokyo Game Show about how Gravity Rush director Keiichiro Toyama-san was teasing a new Gravity Rush project. Well, in the latest issue of Famitsu Magazine, Toyama-san stated that we could expect to see his new title and new endeavor shown in 2015. He continued, "We've been keeping you all waiting on information for the new Gravity Rush game, but once we show it to the world, I believe you'll understand why we've kept you waiting." So it sounds like we're not only going to be getting a new Gravity Rush game, but that it's going to be a pretty ambitious sequel. So I'm going to keep my ear to the floor, and if I hear anything, we'll be talking about it here on the show.
Yeah, and speaking of Level 5, on their American Facebook page, they put a Happy Holidays message with a little image featuring characters from the Little Battlers experience and Yo-Kai Watch. So, you know, that seems like a suggestion that we might be seeing these games come over. And I was just thinking about this the other day. It's funny that, you know, this popped up because, you know, the Yo-Kai Watch anime is going to be coming over to the West. And I guess according to the Silicon Air article, the Little Battlers anime also, I wasn't really familiar with Little Battlers as much, but Yo-Kai Watch, you know, I'm really, I would not be surprised because it seems Pokemon-esque.
I do not foresee a reality where we get the anime for these series and not the games. Let's just put it that way. Like, if someone is paying to license the anime, I'm quite certain that there are plans to bring the game over as well.
I mean, because everything that I've read, seen, as far as Yo-Kai Watch is concerned, seems very Pokemon-esque to me.
We say seems Pokemon-esque, but in Japan, it's almost like performing better than Pokemon.
And, you know, they dabbled in Pokemon similar things with Ni No Kuni, so, you know, level 5, booby.
All right, well, that's all we have on the rumor fronts this week, so it's time for us to get down to those social links.
All right, so over on the Twitter sphere, we've got a couple of tweets rounded up here from Gamer Fox in response to our gaming censorship episode. Says that one of my favorites involves Bowser in Super Mario RPG, whose victory pose was altered. The change was due to his victory pose being similar to giving the middle finger, which is awesome, really. I mean, we all know that pose, but it's so fitting for Bowser. Oh, that Bowser.
I heart Bowser.
Right? And Gamer Fox also says, my other one is another SNES game, Earthbound, where Ness has PJs instead of being butt naked. Yeah, that's true. I mean, come on, he was a sprite. And it's not like you could see anything, but on the other hand, I guess he is just a kid. Japan is much more open about nudity than we are, though it seems gore is less acceptable. Culture! Good point, and that's very true. You know, it makes me think of Dragon Ball Z, where they would put, like, leaves over Gohan, over his privates, but in
yeah, absolutely.
Japan, like, they didn't. Steelygar underscore CTR says, Conker's Bad Fur Day being more censored in the Xbox 360 version boggles my mind. That is a great point. He says, I think a lot of people forgot about the awful 360 version for good reason. Yeah, that was effed up that, you know, there were so many things wrong with that 360 port.
Absolutely.
Bummer. Shane Alenko says, the Busta Groove 1 song, poor Hammond Pinky, the Strikes edit, badly cut as it is, was actually okay to me.
It's so funny that he brought that up because that's one I was actually thinking about including when we talked about that episode. When we talked about forming that episode, but it never occurred to me to include it for whatever reason when we actually put the episode together. So, that's a good one. They re-recorded several of those songs and made more changes than, the Lammy song got, for example.
Yeah. In other tweets, we got a tweet from Little Daddy's Pizza saying, my commute just got better. It's a screenshot. And the first thing I saw was, oh, Nintendo Fun Club, Game Bar, Koopa Club. But then what I saw, which I think is why it was tweeted at us, is there was a new episode of Game Buoy that showed up in his podcast apps. And I'm like, aww.
Yay.
Thanks, Little Daddy's Pizza. And then thank you to Bron Dwarf over from the Nintendo Fun Club podcast saying, those are some fantastic podcast choices. Agreed. Dan
Concur.
_ Diaz. The Game Buoy superfan says, just catching up with the WoW episode. Now I want to resubscribe. Do it.
Yeah, you probably should.
You know, and get your wife to as well. You know, she can play it while the baby's napping. Although, you know, she probably has a million things she'd rather do, but we would love to have you back. Anyone, but especially you two, but also anyone. Last but certainly not least, Ikuma JP says, in Japan, we have to make sure the character we create have 5 fingers that'll be banned, as it might be mistaken as glamorizing. So I believe that was in response to the censorship episode. So, yeah, it's very interesting that, you know, kind of what was alluded to by Gamer Fox about, you know, just some of the changes that we've seen. And going back to what Gamer Fox said about the gore, I was thinking of, you know, No More Heroes we talked about. That definitely was one where the blood was changed and stuff. So,
yeah, absolutely.
Definitely interesting to hear the, you know, the differences. And I guess at the end of the day, which is worse, nudity or gore, you know? I guess, you know, people might have different feelings about that. And with that, I'd like to open it up to all of you out there in Radioland. We would always love to hear from you, whether it's in response to a question of the week or just a general feedback, just saying hello, anything you want.
And we, you know, obviously are very interested in hearing about your games of the year for 2014.
Indeed. So hashtag Game Buoy Extra, what were your Game Buoy 2014? I'm not your Game Buoy. So sorry.
What were your 2014 games of the year? If you want to message us on Twitter, you're probably just going to do your top game or maybe a top 2 or 3. If you want to go over on Facebook and post on our Facebook page, we'd love to see your entire top 10.
Or top 15.
15 might be a little much. We might have to start truncating at that point.
It's true. But you know, we always love to hear from you, and we love your feedback.
We really do.
We love your iTunes subscriptions, ratings, and reviews. Just go to iTunes or your podcast app and search for Game Buoy. We will most likely be the first thing to pop up, I hope. If there's something else that does...
If it's not, you're not doing your job, Slaggy.
Oops. We like your Facebook likes. We effing love Twitter. You can tweet us at GameBuoy.com. The .org is spelled out D-O-T-O-R-G.
At GameBuoy.org. .org is spelled out D-O-T-O-R-G.
Like, I mean, we really, really love Twitter. We're okay with Tumblr. We really, I think our Game Buoy webmaster resolution, so to speak, is to kind of bump up our Tumblr presence.
Bitch, you say that every damn day.
I gave you permissions for the Tumblr. Maybe you should do something
about
that.
Yeah, and I've tweeted once or twice to it, or tumbled to it. I've tumbled to it once or twice.
Of course, if you're one of those Google Plusers, you can plus one us over on Google Plus, and you can email us at mailbuoy@gamebuoy.org.
Mailbuoy@gamebuoy.org.
Whoa. All right. Everything, including our entire episode archive, all 70 of these,
all 70,
is over at GameBuoy.org. What's that address?
GameBuoy.org.
Whoa. Cat Spike, I believe you have some shout-outs for us, because we like to recognize other great podcasts out there.
As ever and always, my first shout-out goes over to Koopa Club. That is Koopa with the Q and Club with the K. Koopa Club is an award-winning podcast about Nintendo and gaming with an LGBT twist. I'd be remiss not to mention VG Realness, serving up a weekly dose of gaming chit-chat among friends, as well as the Game Over Takeover, your one-stop shop to go to for geekery galore. I'd be remiss not to mention Orange Lounge Radio, where every gamer has a voice, and from whom I steal ever so many of my cues. Of course, I also want to point you in the direction of the Nintendo Fun Club, where you'll find platformers, positivity, and pop punk.
I like all of those things.
In non-gaming podcast news and views, I would point you in the direction of Reading is Fundamental. That is, of course, Slagkick's series about LOGO's hit series, RuPaul's Drag Race. They currently put up episode 0 for the upcoming...
When you say they, you mean
season.
We?
And, of course, the collaborators on that show are myself, Rob from Orange Lounge Radio, and Delvin from VG Realness.
Yes, mama!
I also want to point you toward the Starboard Power Coupling podcast, a Star Trek podcast you hope doesn't fail, as well as X Nation over at culturalwormhole.blogspot.com, an awesome podcast focusing on Marvel's Mighty Mutants. And last but most certainly not least, Tables, Ladders, and Podcast, a professional wrestling podcast for the common man. Slaggy, why don't you take us to a game bar?
Game Bar is a podcast that fills your brain space with hours of gay video game commentary. They are basically the gay video game Prairie Home Companion, Lindsay Lohan version, and a part of the Hunty Bunch. I'd like to shout out to two fantastic VOG Network shows. Voice of Geeks Network at VOGNetwork.com. The first one being Girls Gone WoW, where you can get a female perspective on the world's most popular MMO. And Horde House, place for all things online gaming, but never too seriously. And last, but certainly not least, is La Palanca Podcast. Podcast por y para gay gamers latinoamericanos en español. I'd also like to continue pouring out a 4E. This is starting to get expensive, unless it's Miller High Life.
Steel Reserve, fool!
To Zelda Reorchestrated, the late great project that aims to reorchestrate Zelda music in beautiful symphonic sound.
Thank you all out there in Internet Radio Land for spending this lovely Sunday afternoon with us, and more importantly, for spending 2014 with us.
Yay! Yeah,
we're gonna raise
you.
We're gonna raise a glass to you guys. I hope that you have a lovely new year. I hope you had a very happy holiday. Let's all look forward to 2015 together, and let's hope that it brings lots of great gaming to us all. We'll see you next time, but until then, keep gaming.
Keep gaming.
Keep thinking.
Keep thinking.
And see you, Space Cowboy.
In 2015. News, news, news.
Oh my god.
Piplup, the penguin Pokemon. I'm glad they kept the actual Pokemon calls in the game, because otherwise it would be like, Piplup, Piplup, Plop, 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 Plop. Although I guess they do have Pikachu! But they've had that since Yellow, so whatever.
It's going to be an iOS game released on iOS. And last, but certainly not least, we have word of an upcoming iOS spin-off for Danganronpa. This one is going to be Danganronpa Unlimited Battle, and it appears to be a take on the current mobile game fad, that is to say, sort of the whole, like, combat pinball that you might have heard us talk about here on the show with regard to Monster Strike.
Yeah.
This game will have new voice acting by the voice cast of the Danganronpa series, and will apparently have some level of actual story progression for the Danganronpa series, though exactly how they'll do that remains to be seen.
Interesting.
Indeed.
Uh-oh, no, we're not going to go there.